welcome to the Boiler Basketball Show. 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7thehammer.com. I'm Jared Jezulaitis. Jeff Julek is out on assignment today, so I turn to my morning show co-host, Kyle Charters, to come fill in. Welcome, Kyle.
Good afternoon.
Sorry, I should have put up more streamers for you, maybe some balloons, but everything kind of happened kind of quickly, so I got prepared on basketball instead of doing the streamers
there
and all
that. So
I was going to put a little banner up that says you are here, but unfortunately I didn't have the time. So thanks for bearing with me. We're going to spend the entire hour talking Purdue hoops. Alan Karpik from GoldenBlack.com will be on with us here in just a little bit as well. Purdue back at Mackey Arena tomorrow, 2 o'clock. They'll take on Chicago State, a Chicago State team where if you you go and look up the recent schedule. It's reassuring as a Purdue fan, maybe is the good term to put it. I mean, they're not good. They're bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. Purdue with an opportunity here over the next couple of games to get back in the right direction, at least in terms of victories. Now, how much do you learn about Purdue over these next couple of games with Chicago State on Saturday? And then Jacksonville State a week from then, I don't know. But Purdue does have some things that it can work on itself and about itself. And, you know, a lot of those things center around Purdue offensively and having better spacing and better flow and, you know, finding places to go with the ball in critical possessions. How many critical possessions will there be? Well, that's hard to tell. But, you know, I think that you've got to work on some things. And then, you know, have individual players who I think can make some improvements as they round into new roles for the Boilermakers. And I'm talking about guys like Aaron Wheeler and, you know, Nojel Eastern, and they've got to make some improvements here. And I think these will be over the next couple of weeks, a couple of games to have that opportunity to do so.
Now you may be asking yourself, cause I know Purdue fans have said this in the past that they don't have interest, even though the game is sold out. They don't have interest in these really inferior opponents. Don't want to see them just beating up on guys. They want to see actual good games. But this is not something that Purdue went out and scheduled themselves. This is part of that Emerald Coast Classic. That's the campus game for that tournament. So it kind of comes, you know, it comes with the tournament, right? So it's not something where Purdue's got out, Matt Painter's got out and going, yeah, let's get a just one of those teams that not going to push us too much. We get the W, and then maybe kind of get back to basics if we need to. I mean, this is is what it is.
Well, and you have to play teams that you're going to beat. It happens every year, and I understand that from a fan perspective, you want every game to be a big game, but it's just not reality. You've got to go out there and rack up some wins in the non-conference and have the opportunities to just play other teams and be able to work on things that you need to work on in that kind of environment, but. Yeah, I mean, Chicago State's not very good. The Cougars have lost a whole lot of games, only 3-28 last season. They won all three of their games right in a row in late November and otherwise really just got hammered. I've lost 44 straight games on the road dating back to 2017. So Purdue's going to have a pretty easy time on Saturday afternoon, one would suspect. And so, you know, that won't make for a very exciting atmosphere as Purdue sort of pulls away maybe early on in this contest. Yet, it's a game that's on the schedule. Purdue does come off a couple of losses in a row. So a chance to feel a little bit better about itself, chance for guys to gain a little bit more confidence, and a chance to start to build something as you look to fix some of the mistakes that plagued you in the back-to-back losses to Texas and at Marquette.
And maybe some guys that you normally don't get to see are going to get some more time in this one. Certainly Evan Boudreau, we're going to talk a lot this week, I think, about the four position and that production with Aaron Wheeler. Not really,
You can't play 40 minutes a game, so Purdue needs more production out of the backup four spot.
Well, they need production out of Wheeler, too, on top of that. But, yeah, I think the backup is really a bit of a concern here. We're already talking about pulling red shirts off of guys in order to do this, or at least fans are doing that. But Evan Boudreau is a guy that, you're going to see, I think, get some minutes here to try to find his groove.
Guy that didn't play the four position last year was more of a center, but you'd like to see him, especially on the offensive end, be able to come in and make some solid contributions for the Boilermakers. I mean, he's getting the minutes now at the backup four position. So when Wheeler comes out of the game, or if he fouls out like he did on Wednesday night, Boudreaux's got to be able to come in. Now, Purdue did not go to him late in that contest because he struggled a little bit. So you've got to see him play to his strengths a little bit. And he does have strengths. I mean, he's a great shooter, especially at his size. I think he hustles a little bit. I think he can board. So, you know, you've got to be able to get those things out of him. And you're right, these two games will be opportunities there. I'd like to see Travion Williams sort of break out as well. You know, he's been okay. Uh-huh. I think he's been okay defensively and on the glass. But, you know, I'd like to see him finish near the basket, which he did really well in that stretch last season, but I struggled a little bit with this year. So, you know, these will be opportunities, one would suspect, against opponents that don't quite have the size, especially the size combined with the athleticism. So you would hope that he would be able to have some pretty big games and sort of get rolling a little bit. I think that's the thing you look for more than anything, is you've got a couple of guys moving into bigger spots who have yet to really sort of find their groove here early in the season. And it's games like these ones that provide those players the opportunity to do so.
And maybe try to figure out whether or not you really can do the combo of Harms and Williams out there. I know that's something that some fans have been asking about. Can we just go ahead and do that? We understand that's limited in some capacity, but how effective can it be? I think that's something else we're going to see on Saturday, is Matt Painter try to go with that and see if that's really a viable option instead of doing the small ball like you had to against Marquette there after Wheeler fouled out.
Yeah, I think that's true, that you know that Purdue could, you know, try to see whether that combo works. Now, it might work against these kind of opponents. Does it work then against teams in the Big Ten with both those guys on the field? I think Painter has not yet seen it in practice or in scrimmages or elsewhere. Now, he used it a little bit last year to some effectiveness, but not to any great length. So, you know, is that an answer to filling some of those minutes at the 4-5 positions? We'll see. I mean, maybe it's something that can develop as the season goes on. But, you know, clearly Purdue needs a little bit more depth, effective depth in its front court. And we'll see what form that takes here over the next couple of games.
Yeah, maybe, again, you're going to see a lot of guys get some additional minutes. Maybe a guy like Emmanuel Duona gets in there and shows you a little bit of something, and maybe you start to reconsider what his role is on the team. I don't know if that's a viable option or not. But
he's the third five, though, so there's just not a lot of minutes to be had there unless you feel comfortable about Matt Harms and or Travion Williams moving down to the four for some minutes. But if you felt good about that, then you would feel good about those two guys playing together, which would be your best, you know, option for those 5 or 6 minutes per game. So, you know, Duona might get in there a little bit and get a little bit of run, but I don't know that that necessarily means Purdue would use him in a fashion that would allow one of those other fives to move down and play the four.
Well, this is one of those games, though, I think all the possibilities are on the table, right? I mean, if you're going to try to address that, you might as well, this is the game, to get it out there, just kind of run and see if anything really sticks. I'm not saying it will, but this is the game. If you're going to experiment with that kind of stuff, this is the game right here.
Yeah, but you also want to play your normal sets and your normal rotation and get those guys who you will be playing together, you know, against better opponents, feeling good about those scenarios. So I think you sort of generate, you know, games within the game a little bit there, to try to simulate, you know, better competition and your usual rotations and, you know, try to get the offense in a better flow, play the game sort of 4 minutes at a time and win those 4 minute segments and see if you can play a more complete basketball game.
All right, lots of good stuff coming up on the Boiler Basketball Show today. Still got to get to Alan Karpik of goldandblack.com. He's going to join us next here on 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7thehammer.com. It's the Boiler Basketball Show, 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Jared Jeselnik, Kyle Charters is filling in for Jeff Julek today. Big thanks to him. We go to the Wings and Center Hammerhead Hotline. We talk to the head man at goldandblack.com. That is Alan Karpik. Goldandblack.com, tremendous resource for all Purdue fans. And if you're wondering what's going on with these new basketball recruits, three of them signed earlier this week. Alan, Brian's got a great write-up on all those guys to give Purdue fans an idea of just what Matt Painter has brought into the program, hasn't he?
Well, it is. You know, it's it always, when they finally signed, he's been talking to the those guys for so long that it's almost anticlimactic in some ways because when they finally get to signing, you almost forget that signing days happen because they've committed for so long. But certainly three guys that figure to make a big difference in Purdue's program, and that's what's going to be a storyline as we watch this season unfold, but also look into the future.
Alan, in your estimation, do you feel like those three guys, are those all positions that Purdue needed? Did they take care of the business that they needed to take care of with this recruiting cycle?
Well, I think certainly you look for best talent in some cases, and certainly Jaden Ivey is the situation, and a guy that's really blown up as a player is at guard. I think what you see with the fact that Jihad Proctor will be gone obviously next year. Purdue still needs to score, and these are two guys that can complement Ethan Morton, also that can complement one another. I think they're highly ranked enough that they're going to be guys that are going to be impact players probably from the get go. And it will, you have to figure that. And obviously, with the guys that they have coming back, these guys will get a chance to work their way into things. But they're also guys that they expect to be difference makers pretty early in their careers.
Alan, Purdue takes on a Chicago State team on Saturday afternoon that has struggled not only this year but in recent seasons, having lost 44 straight road games. What does Purdue need to do in a game like this to sort of show you perhaps that they've made a little bit of progress after back-to-back losses?
Well, and the fact that, I know you've done the research on not only their struggles over 44 straight games, but even this season, you don't think it's going to be a lot of competition. But I think this team just needs to get more comfortable with itself at the offensive end. That is a clear, certainly the second half of the Marquette game shows that in spades, that if you don't, if you can't score at crunch time. Now, will a game like Saturday's make any difference in that, or walking out of there, well, they fix these things? No, you won't. But I do think this is like pretty much all basketball seasons, and like we saw last year with Purdue, this is a you got to hope it's a work in progress. You got to hope you haven't seen the best out of what the Boilermakers have. That's stating the obvious. So it's a long-winded way of saying that you need to make progress somewhat in silence, or in where the lights aren't on, or where a lot of people aren't paying attention to you. And I can almost assure you that people will not be hanging on that Purdue-Chicago State or the Purdue-Jacksonville State score around the country over the next couple weekends.
So, Alan, when you get those type of games, I know fans are like, it's great to have the win and all that stuff, but is it really doing a whole lot for you as a program, as a team, when you have such a weak opponent like Chicago State coming in?
Well, I think, you schedule things out and you try to get things figured out that you get the best competition you can in there. So, I can't speak to what they've tried to do on the schedule. I mean, overall, their schedule, I think, has been more competitive than it. I'm talking about the entire non-conference schedule. You're always going to have some games like this, and it's hard to know necessarily what you're going to get out of it. But again, I think this is a team that needs some confidence offensively. Even if you get guys that get their stroke back, and get to, if Aaron Wheeler comes in and makes five threes and starts thinking he can make threes in competition, that's a good thing. And I think that's where Purdue is right now is, again, you have two losses by very close margins. One you were an underdog in against Marquette. That I get. Texas, if I know Purdue was an 8 or 9 point favorite and should have won both of the games. So all is not lost, so to speak, but you are sitting with a 1-2 record and you need to make improvement. If Purdue doesn't improve, it's going to have a long season. That's an obvious thing. I expect this team to improve, however.
One thing that's been talked about, especially coming off the loss at Marquette, Alan, is the backup four position and what Purdue and Matt Painter need to do at that spot. Evan Boudreau has gotten some minutes there. But then when Aaron Wheeler fouled out on Wednesday night, Purdue went small, didn't bring Boudreau back into the game. Is that a spot where, you know, either Boudreau needs to pick up his play a little bit, or Purdue's got to be able to find some sort of answer for when Wheeler comes out of the game, and maybe that's playing the two big guys together, but it seems like something has to be done there to get quality minutes at that spot.
Well, and I think that's some of the things you may get to figure out. Now, we know that that Matt Harms and Trayvon Williams have played together for a grand total of how many minutes over last year? Not very, very much. And I think it has a lot to do with the dynamic of who you're playing. Against Marquette, it seemed to me to make sense to be able to play. Yeah, I know Purdue didn't rebound well in the second half. I don't know if that had a whole lot to do with it, but. You have guys that can score, and you were in a position in that game when Aaron Wheeler fouls out that you needed to find somebody that could put the ball in the basket. And Evan Boudreau is probably not your first option when it comes to that. So I look at that a lot as situational. Yeah, you need to have somebody else. You need to have everybody on this roster contribute at the level that you want, and that's not happening at least in the second half of the last two games, or crunch time of the last two games. So that all those factors are play into this, but you need to have Aaron Wheeler perform at a higher level. But when he's out of the game, and if you're going small, you need to have Proctor and Stefanovic make jump shots. They didn't against Marquette, and they had good looks. And yeah. Proctor, and things just look a lot different when you make shots, and you can't change your roster necessarily. And I think in certain situations, Williams and Harms together can work. In certain situations, it wouldn't. And I'm not sure that this past Wednesday night, though it's an interesting concept, certainly bandied about in our message boards on an hourly basis, I don't think it's dealing too much in reality of what you were looking at as you looked at that game in the final 5 or 6 minutes of the game against Marquette.
You're not thinking about pulling a red shirt off of somebody like Mason Gillis to help fix that problem, are you?
Oh, I think a lot of people are. That's an easy thing to say right now, is that, well, how can you possibly sit a top 100 recruit? I mean, you can read that. I get that, but you have those guys of which we're not privy to what reasons why they decided they wanted to do it. It's a two-way street, and I understand with Mason Gillis, makes a lot of sense to me that he sits a year and gets 100% healthy. Those guys I know are working hard from an individual standpoint. Brandon Newman, again, a guy that they like a lot, but may have not adjusted enough and quickly enough to this. I think the guys you see on the floor right now are pretty good options. Maybe with the possible exception of what Kyle talked about, it finding another score in the front court. But this is a team that has enough options, in my view, to be successful. And I don't know you never rule things out with an injury of one of those guys coming off, whether Gillis or Newman coming off their red shirt. But I think they did it for a reason, and it's a two-way street on that decision as well.
Alan Karp at GoldenBlack.com, again, a tremendous resource for all things Purdue when it comes to this basketball season. They do a tremendous job, the whole staff over there. Alan, hey, buddy, we appreciate it as always. Enjoy your bye week for the football. I don't know what you're going to do without Nate in the postgame show. How are you going to fill that time?
I am going to be there 2 or 3 hours earlier for that Purdue-Chicago State game. That's what I'm going to do. So, no, it's a good weekend to do that. We'll look forward to getting ramped back up in football next week.
All right, Alan. Thanks so much, bud. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, coming back with more of the Boiler Basketball Show next on 101.7 The Hammer. 101.7 The Hammer. Boiler Basketball Show, 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7thehammer.com. Big thanks to Alan there for being on with us. Kyle Charters filling in for Jeff Julek. I'm Jared Jessalitis, talking this hour all about your Boiler hoops, coming off a couple of rough losses, Kyle, since we've had the last show, the Texas game, the Marquette game. Frustrating losses, I think, as fans. I'm sure even more frustrating to the guys that are out there on the court. Two games that you come away from thinking that, yeah, we should have won those games, but you don't. I don't know which one's more frustrating because they each have, their own little thing. I mean, Texas at home, you'd like to be able to win those home games like that. You feel like that was in hand. Of course, you go on the road to Marquette. You had that big lead that you watch just kind of get ate up really, really quick there.
Mm-hmm.
For you, which loss was more frustrating?
Well, probably the second one because it's the most recent, and it was because it was the second one, and it was in a somewhat similar fashion in that Purdue had a lead and then lost the lead. You know, is there anything that's real concerning? I think the concern is that you, you know, have not played well offensively down the stretch. You've not been able to find a guy to go get you a shot when you need a shot. And so the next time Purdue is in that situation, when it's up in the second half to a quality opponent, I think you're going to feel a little bit nervous. Purdue itself is going to feel a little bit nervous about, you know, going to find the offense when the opponent's defense picks up for critical spots. So, you know, that's not going to be answered here over the next couple of weeks, it would not seem. So, you know, do you find a real answer for that in the short term? I don't think so, because you're not going to be tested in that fashion. But that's the concern, right, is that, you know, Purdue needs to be able to play better in those winning moments. And if it doesn't, then it's going to find itself in situations where it has leads and loses them, or has leads and finds itself in a real dogfight down the stretch that it did not anticipate. And that's the thing that you want to see corrected here sooner rather than later.
And it's almost as if, you know, you don't really have that killer mentality, that foot on the throat kind of mentality just yet. But I also think that's part of the problem of not developing that go-to guy down the stretch. I think Jahad Proctor could possibly be that guy. I think he's got the aggressiveness to want to take the shots. Matt Painter's talked on multiple occasions as he's got to yell at him to stop passing up the opportunities. He could be the guy. But I think that's what you're missing in Carson Edwards. It's not only that guy that can go out there and create his own shots and be in those situations you're talking about, but that guy with that killer mentality there down the stretch.
Yeah. I think there's some truth to that, and you've got to be able to find a guy who wants to go get the shot when Purdue needs the shot. And it's not surprising that Purdue is in that situation at this moment of the season, only three games in, considering everything that they lost last year. I mean, what, 80% of the scoring probably? I mean, what, the number is just huge. I mean, 90% of the three-pointers. I mean, you're talking about a ton of production that Purdue is missing from last year, not only in Carson Edwards and Ryan Klein, but I think Grady Eifert. I think Purdue has missed him and that grit and you know, his ability to hit a big shot in a big moment that might go overlooked a little bit, but when you look back at instances, turned out to be really big shots. So Purdue is missing those things. They've got guys. The good thing is they have guys who are capable of doing those things. It's just, you know, they don't have the experience doing so. So there's an adjustment period there, and I think Purdue's going through the growing pains of that period.
Is it really fair for us to compare this season with last season and the slow starts? I mean, they're two different squads, and I get that, but I mean, I think people just really forget, because thinking about that Elite Eight run, I think you forget about how rough that season started off with, where they were trying to figure out with Carson Edwards, what the rest, you know, what were the roles? How was this team going to proceed? Did you just put it all on Carson's plate? Does he need to, you know, we really struggled with that stuff early on. These are different struggles, though. So is it fair to compare the two in your mind?
Oh, I think it's fair. I mean, you know, I think that your hope with this team is that it does go through a similar path to last year's team. I mean, you don't hope that Purdue loses games early, but I think if you're realistic and an understanding of where Purdue is, you'll know that it's going to have some bumps in the road here in the early part of the season. And your hope and maybe your trust in Purdue's coaching staff tells you that at some point those things will start to come together. Now, it's not a guarantee. It wasn't a guarantee last year. But Purdue bought in to what it was doing. It improved defensively, I think, in particular, and then people found their roles around Carson Edwards, who then got hot at the right moment last year as well. So all those things came together. Now, you know, you're doing it again this year with different players and different pieces and a different time against different opponents. So there's no guarantee that, you know, there's no guarantee that the bumps here early in the season get straightened out late in the season. That's not a guarantee. So you don't want to give away games against Texas and Marquette, which Purdue has done in some ways, feeling like, oh, we'll get these back. They'll be NCAA resume builders later. That's not a guarantee. So you've got to work at it. Purdue needs to work at it. And, you know, I think the trust, though, is that Purdue will do those things to put it in a position to where, you know, you can grow and learn from these early season mistakes.
Funny that you use that word trust, because after the Marquette game, you know, Matt Painter, and when we discussed this on our morning show, there's a lot of guys, a lot of talent, but he doesn't trust the guys yet. That was his comments. When I hear that, I think you and I both kind of agreed. That's an apt assessment of this team right now. That's the feeling you get. Now, that gets taken differently in the locker room, because those are, you know, those are the players. I look in these kind of cases for those locker room leaders to help maintain those attitudes and that morale and keep them focused. And in thinking about that, I tried to ask myself, who are the leaders? Is there one leader in that locker room right now? Is there a couple of leaders? Like, who do you lean on in these situations off the court and in the locker room?
Well, I think they have some good leaders. Nojel Eastern should be a good leader. Matt Harms as well, though I'd like to see him keep his emotions in check on the court a little bit. But Purdue's got good leadership, I think, out of its players. Shahad Proctor, you would imagine, would be able to fill that role. I think it's always difficult when you're a transfer coming in to sort of do that, but he might ease into that spot a little bit. Yeah, you know, back to what you said about what Painter said, you know, part of that too was we have talent, we're not getting a lot of productivity or the equal amount. And I think there's truth to that. It's a good way to say it. Purdue's got the talent. That needs to equate to productivity. He needs to trust that those guys are going to go out and do the things that they need to do as well. And, you know, there's a lot of that building process here early on in the season with both those things. And we'll see how quickly it's able to come together. Purdue's got a couple of games here. Then it gets back into the tournament down in Florida. And I think at that point on a neutral court against three pretty quality opponents, you're going to find out some things about Purdue, about whether it has grown from now through then.
It's kind of an interesting way to put it. I didn't think about, you know, the growth aspect that comes out of those type of losses. And it really wasn't something that really crossed my mind.
Well, you would hope they would. I mean, there's lessons to be learned from both of those games. I think different lessons. Purdue literally just let the ball slip through its fingers against Texas and, you know, didn't value individual possessions enough. And, you know, that game just literally slipped away. Now, against Marquette, I think it was a little bit different in that Purdue just missed opportunities earlier on in the game. I think they're all sort of in the same umbrella there as far as missed possessions, letting possessions sort of go and valuing, you know, every chance that you have. It came sort of at different points, I think, because in the Marquette game, you had a real chance in those last 2 minutes of that game to, and really before that, too, with all the missed free throws, to really put Marquette behind, could have been up in that game at the half by 22 points. And it makes that climb much more difficult for the Golden Eagles. So I think that Purdue just needs to, you know, take lessons away from that to value every possession, whether it's in the first half, whether it's at the free throw line. Whether it's late in the contest. I mean, all those type of things matter, and they matter a lot. So, you know, Purdue's got to learn from those mistakes and show some growth from those and take those forward. Will we know here in the short term? Probably not, but we'll find out in late November, later this month, no doubt.
Kind of surprised it took us 9.5 minutes before we even touched on free throws, which was quite possibly the most maddening thing out of those two games.
Well, the problem is Purdue's best free throw shooters are gone. And so, you know, you go from a very reliable free throw shooting team to one that you're less inclined to have confidence in. And you're going to have Matt Harms and Trevion Williams. I mean, Williams looks like he's just sort of hoping the ball goes in, which is a bad way to be shooting your free throws. I mean, he literally looks from the moment he catches the ball to the moment of release like he is just thinking of the basketball gods when he tries to get that ball to go in. And he's going to shoot a lot of free throws because he's such a big dude. Inside's going to get fouled. So he's got to be able to have a little bit more confidence there. You know, Matt Harms has made a lot of improvements over the years. He's got to continue to work at it. I mean, Nojel Eastern was such a bad free throw shooter early in his career and suddenly turned it on toward the beginning of last year. And so he's going to step to that line, and you need him to be sort of a guy that sets a tone from there. So Purdue's got to be better at the line. It's not going to be as good as it was last year, but it cannot start 1-for-9, especially at a time when you're up by double digits and could really be putting a hammer to the opponent on its home floor. Just a bad way to go about things. And as I said during the game, you know, you're up by 12, you're up 1-for-9 from the free throw line. At that very moment, it didn't seem like a very sustainable way to play basketball, and as it turned out, it was not.
Nail it. All right, let's take a break. We come back. Take a look at the Big Ten schedule this week. We'll try to find the marquee games and more when we come back on Boiler Basketball Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7 The Hammer. Welcome back to Boiler Basketball Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Jared Jesselitis and Kyle Charters filling in for our good buddy Jeff Julek today. Do appreciate that. All right, last segment here. We want to get into the Big Ten as a whole. I think there were a few surprises. If I'm being honest, Kyle, there were a few surprises for me this week. But let's go through the standings here and try to figure out what are the games worth watching this week and if anybody's in any kind of trouble. Let's start with tonight. Elon will head on up to Michigan. Oral Roberts is at Iowa. South Dakota State at Nebraska. And Minnesota at Utah. Anything grab your attention in the Friday night slate?
I don't know. We're sort of in that time of year where teams are playing teams that they should beat before you get into sort of that holiday schedule. However, you know, I think Minnesota going on the road to Utah, that'll be another challenging game for the Gophers. I think Minnesota is going to find itself sort of in that, you know, middle of the road mix of the Big Ten at best. And there'll be a lot of jockeying for position with those teams, right? You look at that first tier of the Big Ten, the Michigan States, the Purdue's, you know, maybe you throw Michigan in there, Maryland, certainly the Ohio States. But you look at that then second wave of teams and exactly who those teams are. You know, I think Minnesota wants to be in that group, but is it? I don't know. You know, and I think maybe that game at Utah late will be a challenge. Man, Nebraska.
Yeah, that's always the one to watch right there, right? Is it how bad it could be?
0-2 both at home. South Dakota State, which I don't know about much about the Jackrabbits this season. But, you know, a pretty quality program overall. So, you know, does Nebraska lose another home game? And what does that mean for the rest of the Mayor's season there in his first year of Lincoln? I think that'll be pretty telling to exactly where Nebraska is. Those other games, the couple, I mean, you know, both teams playing at home, you would hope that they would have a pretty easy road.
South Dakota State is 3-1 on the season. I couldn't tell you who these three teams are that they beat, but they did play USC back on the 12th on the road, lost 84-66. Jackrabbit scoring almost 79 points per game. So, yeah, anytime it's the Cornhuskers, you really don't know what you're going to get. Saturday, you don't have any Purdue football to watch, but there will be plenty of Big Ten football and basketball going on. Oakland will head out to 7th-ranked Maryland. Chicago State at Purdue, which we've already discussed with you. St. Bonaventure will go on out to Rutgers. Actually, I take that back. That's up in Toronto, in Ontario, which is currently located in Canada. Troy will head to Indiana for a night game at Assembly Hall.
Not good. Not to repeat myself, but again, you're in that time frame where you're playing teams that you want to beat so that you can pick up some victories when you know you'll have those guarantee games, you know, ACC, Big Ten. You'll be playing those tournament games. So does anything stand out here to me? Not really. I mean, Maryland at home against Oakland. Oakland's usually a pretty decent outfit. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a challenge there. I'm curious about the Terps. Are they really the number seven team in the country? Could they be a team that could challenge Michigan State for Big Ten supremacy? Don't know, you know, enough about them other than, you know, they're really, you know, pretty quality up front. So, you know, curious about Maryland here early on in this season. Can it really take care of its business before it does get into those more difficult games coming up?
On Sunday, just one Big Ten matchup. Wisconsin will host Marquette. I think that'll be an interesting matchup based on what we just, you know, got done seeing out of the Golden Eagles this week.
You know, in a sort of a rivalry game here between the two Wisconsin schools. And, you know, I think Kohl Center is always a difficult place to play. You know, Wisconsin's going to be very physical. They're going to, you know, play its pace, try to keep this game, you know, low scoring. I mean, Wisconsin, I thought, played St. Mary's well in a game that it lost on a neutral court, but in a game that, you know, a team that has a very different style. Marquette's going to want to, you know, play up and down a little bit more. Obviously, Marcus Howard's going to put up shots and want to get going. It'll be interesting to see how Wisconsin deals with him. I think this is a game that Wisconsin can win at home against this Golden Eagle squad. Should be, though, a pretty good game, I would suspect.
Let's move on to Monday, where Charleston Southern will go up to Michigan State. Hawaii will go to Illinois. I'm sure a lot of the Illini are thinking, man, the one time I would like to go play a road game against a team, Hawaii would be nice to be doing that. But unfortunately, that's in the State Farm Center. Stetson taking on 16th-ranked Ohio State.
I like Ohio State. I mean, you know, I thought that win against Villanova was a huge victory. I mean, they really just sort of took it to the visitors there pretty early on. I think we're up 19-3 in the first 5 minutes of that game and cruised then afterward. This is a much better, more well-rounded Ohio State team. Last year, if it didn't hit shots, it was really in trouble because it just didn't have enough perimeter scoring. Guys had to hit a couple of shots for them. It's got better, you know, scoring on the perimeter this year to go along with some pretty good bigs. And so I think this Ohio State team coached well, too. You know, I think that they're got a chance to be pretty good here and to, you know, have a good non-conference going into the Big Ten. Should take care of Stetson without a problem, but I like this Ohio State team. I think that it can really make some noise in the Big Ten. Did so at times last year, but really was handicapped by its offense at times as well.
The one-name opponents for the Big Ten continue on Tuesday. You like Stetson. That's a great name. How about Bucknell going to Penn State? Radford going to Welsh Ryan Arena in Evanston. Fairfield heads out to 7th-ranked Maryland. Not going to get much out of, I think, any of those games, are you?
Well, Bucknell's been an okay program for a number of years. So going to Penn State, you know, maybe a pretty good game. And, you know, you expressed some interest about the Nittany Lions and its start and, you know, Penn State winning at Georgetown. And this is the kind of game that if you're Penn State, you want to go out there and win. It's on your home court. You're coming off a big victory. You want to build a resume here early on in the season that tells people that you are, in fact, for real. Make believers out of non-believers and, you know, feel like that you can compete there in the middle of the Big Ten and maybe get yourself a resume that looks NCAA worthy. So, you know, I think this is a big one for Penn State. It cannot afford home losses to teams that it feels like it could beat and to teams that, you know, are sort of bubble bursting type games, right? I mean, early in the season against a team that has, you know, won its conference and made some noise at times in the NCAA tournament. So this part of the NIT, part of the NIT season tip-off, a game that's on a campus here early on. So Penn State, you know, with an opportunity, I think, against a quality mid-major to try to get another good win.
On Wednesday, Stephen F. Austin heads out to Rutgers. Princeton at IU in Assembly Hall. The Citadel will travel to Illinois in the late start on that one. Still a little curious about Illinois, too. What exactly are they?
Yeah, another team that's in the middle of that pack. I mean, somebody's going to want to separate themselves. Maybe it can be the Illini. We'll see.
All right, and then we go on to Thursday, where North Florida will be at Iowa, Central Michigan at Minnesota, Green Bay at Wisconsin. Wisconsin's stealing all of our opponents, right?
Yeah, Purdue.
Copycats.
And, Purdue and Wisconsin playing the same schedule here, just in reverse order, it feels like. But again, you know, a chance for Wisconsin to dominate, maybe win. I don't know if they'll dominate, but see of the three teams there, you know, who owns the state a little bit. So we'll see what happens later in the week.
So we do have several undefeated teams still left in the Big Ten: Indiana, Maryland, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Rutgers, all still undefeated. One-loss teams include Illinois, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Northwestern. And they are both at 1-1. You get the Golden Gophers, Purdue, and the Cornhuskers all underwater as of today. That's going to do it for us here on the Boiler Basketball Show. I want to be a big thank you to Kyle Charters for filling in here for Jeff Julek. Kind of did it on the last second, buddy. You did a good job. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I know. So, hey, great stuff. We'll get this up for you on Spotify. And, of course, on Apple Podcasts, so you can go back and listen to the show. You can listen to archive shows as well on both those avenues. We will be back again next Friday. Jeff Julek will be back in studio, and we'll be breaking down, hopefully, another Boilermaker win and getting you prepared as we inch closer to the holiday season here with the Boiler Basketball Show. Coming up next, it's the Hammer Down Show. Clayton Duffy, Kelly Kitchell. Have Ethan Morton scheduled to be on, speaking of basketball, the newest, one of the three new recruits for Purdue basketball. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up next on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com.